The following may contain NSFW content and is intended for mature audiences. Parental guidance is suggested.
In a world of sorry-ass social justice warriors,
politically correct panty waists,
and really fake news, there still exists brash, bold dudes with balls who tell it like it really is, really was, and really should be. This is the honest, raw, real Dude Say with Jones and Mike. Jones is a 40-something transcendental meditating hockey-playing vegan who's living the bachelor dream in the heart of the city. Mike's a 40-something beer-swilling suburban married father of four who's traded in motorcycles and marathons for a minivan. They say the things real dudes think, and real women want to hear them say. No topics taboo. Nothing's off limits. No holds are barred. About everything from women to pop culture, millennials to race, news, views, family, money, and more. This is the sh- Dude Say when they're uncensored, unfiltered, and unafraid. Join the show and say some shit too. 872-701-0999. Tweet at Jones and Mike. See and hear us at jonesandmike.com. This is Dude Say. James Barrett's on the line with us. He's a filmmaker. He's also the author of the book, Our Final Invention, Artificial Intelligence and the End of the Human Era. It's great to have him on the show, and you can find him online. You can get the book and also find out more about James at jamesbarrett.com, James, B-A-R-R-A-T.com.
So, James, it's a thrill for me to have you on the show. You know, your book, Our Final Invention, was a book that I read a while ago. And Mike and I were not these super tech guys. We're not these tech writers, but we're constantly talking about like AI from a real barstool perspective, admittedly.
Especially Jones. And he's really afraid of robots and AI. You should know, James.
Absolutely. No,
he
I
is.
Absolutely.
Honest to God.
Any paranoid article, anything that comes up about AI, I'm all over it. So when I read your book, it kind of really brought things into focus for me and
kind of a fantasy thing for you, because it is scary, and the real future is scary.
Well, we're hoping can assuage our bereavement here over the future.
No, it absolutely is scary. And it was one of the things, like, I constantly use your book and go back to it as kind of a jumping off point for a lot of these discussions I have with Mike. You know, there's constantly these stories that are coming up. It just even this week, just there it is right there.
Yeah, I'm not trying to sell books.
Yeah, artificial intelligence, our final invention.
Nice. It's more about getting the word out, really.
Nice.
No, sure. But, you know, earlier this week, there was Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah, yeah.
They had a meeting and were discussing AI. And it was kind of interesting. You know, these are like two giants of the tech world. And I thought it was very interesting, especially since previously as well, Facebook was working on two AI bots that suddenly were communicating with each other in a way that Facebook engineers were not controlling it and had to suddenly unplug them. Here, Zuckerberg and Musk meet, and Elon Musk comes away saying Mark Zuckerberg has a very limited understanding of AI, and I'm curious what your take on that is. Is that the case?
You know, I don't know Mark Zuckerberg, but I know about what Elon Musk has invested his money in and what he's written. And the important thing to know about Elon Musk is he's put his money where his mouth is. He's invested in a lot of organizations that try to mitigate AI risk, like the Future of Life Institute, like MIRI, like the Machine Intelligence Research Institute. He created a company called OpenAI, which is very, very important, because he seeks transparency in AI development, which is going to be critical for navigating the next 20 or 30 years. Elon Musk once said he invests in artificial intelligence not because he wants to make more money, but because he wants to understand what's happening. And so I give him creds for being on the ground with AI. And Mark Zuckerberg, to me, is and has always been, he was a founder and a spokesman, but he's not deep into the technology. He's not when he talks about AI risk, I wouldn't give him a lot of cred.
Okay. And to kind of just go back a little bit, just so some people who are maybe listening to the show that wouldn't be familiar with all of the terms, and these were terms that were introduced to me in your book. You know, obviously I knew the term artificial intelligence. That's kind of the term that everybody uses as it pulls you into the topic. But there's also the term AGI, ASI, artificial general intelligence, artificial super intelligence. Now, along the spectrum, I'd like to have you explain those three terms, but I'm curious in terms of what Facebook was doing with the two bots that were communicating with each other. Is that general intelligence or pure AI?
No, it's very narrow AI that happened to be chatting to each other. It's not in itself very significant.
Okay.
To do some definitions, let's go back way back to intelligence, because one of the really interesting things about artificial intelligence is the definition of AI is about human intelligence in a machine. So it really comes back to what is human intelligence. And so then people like Shane Legg, who was one of the co-founders of DeepMind, he put together 100 definitions of intelligence. So before we try to understand what AI is, we need to understand what our own intelligence is. And here's a good definition I like that he quoted that I subsequently quoted, and that's intelligence is the ability to achieve goals in a variety of environments and to learn. Now, I'm not going to stay on the air and unpack all that, but that's sure. Very, very important. All that's very, very, you know, to achieve goals means you've got to do something. You've got to do something in a variety of novel environments. Means you can't just do it in one narrow thing. You've got to navigate. You've got to recognize objects. You've got to do a bunch of things. And then to learn is a huge one. And that is really our secret power, humans' secret power. We learn really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
So,
now, to that end, it's interesting. You referenced DeepMind. There was it earlier this year? Did they not run an experiment where there were two AI bots, so to speak, that were tasked with going through a virtual apple orchard and collecting apples? Have you heard of this?
I have.
Okay, and while there was an abundance of apples. The two bots just worked, you know, endlessly just picking the apples and doing the task that they were assigned. But then they were also equipped with a gun, so to speak, or some kind of laser. And once the apples became limited, am I not correct? The artificial intelligence bots, and I just say bots for want of, you know, terminology. I mean, obviously I am far more limited than Mark Zuckerberg, but they started attacking and becoming highly aggressive.
Of course. Well, you know, it's not really a fair test. What you want to say about the test is that hostility is an inherent quality of AI. But when you give a bot a laser, it's going to use it. But the more important thing is that we're putting we can't help but put bots and put intelligent agents, which is the name AI makers use, we can't help but put them in contesting situations where they're gambling over a bunch of resources, and that's the state of nature for bots. That's for virtual worlds. That's for everything. And unfortunately, that's for us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem with superintelligence. Just to jump way ahead. The problem with superintelligence is that there are a limited number of resources. There will be competition for resources. Intelligent bots won't want to be turned off. They will want resources. And so they'll use whatever means they have to get resources. So this was actually what they call a toy problem that has repercussions into the rest of the world, into our future.
And DeepMind, that's a Google initiative.
No, DeepMind came out of Great Britain and was bought by Google for $400 million.
Okay, all right.
Interestingly, and it's got Dennis Havelblad, I can't pronounce his last name, is the founder, and he's a great mind of his own. But the interesting thing about that was that when they made that acquisition, DeepMind demanded that Google set up a safety and ethics board to govern the use of their technology. Once then they said, okay, now we'll accept your check for $400 million. I don't know much about what's happened with that, but that was a really good step on the part of DeepMind, that ethics has to go forward with innovation.
James Barrett's with us. He's the author of the book, Our Final Invention, Artificial Intelligence and the End of the Human Era. He's a filmmaker. He's an author of nonfiction works. And you can find him online for more information and to get his book, which Jones has. It's jamesbarrett.com, James, B-A-R-R-A-T.com. Who's leading the AI charge, or who will be credited for advancing it the most? Will it be governments, or will it be, you know, private companies, allegedly, like Google and Facebook? Or will they work together?
Yeah, that's the $10,000 question. Here's the thing. Google has a $200 billion war chest. They can do whatever they want. They can make AI. In fact, in my mind, they're on the fast track for making human level intelligence and machine. In fact, Ray Kurzweil, who's now in charge of their engineering product to reverse engineer a brain, said he wants to make a machine that makes a 300 trillion calculations per second and share that with a billion people online. So that's a brain online that's a super brain, super intelligence. We have an NSA that gets deep into AI. They have a $50 billion a year black budget. They're the people that scare me, because they've made gaffe after gaffe releasing software and malware.
Yeah, the Vault 7 disclosures by WikiLeaks.
Yeah, Stuxnet, the last thing with
WannaCry, yeah.
Yeah, they've proven themselves to be incredibly inept at the stewardship part of technology.
What's a black budget, by the way, James?
A black budget means nobody can scrutinize it.
There's no oversight.
$50 billion a year black budget. Yeah.
Interesting. Shocking. Okay, yeah. And so
your tax money.
Oh, okay. So is the NSA, are they working in concert with, in other words, have Google and Facebook and these tech companies, have they blended in fascistically with the government?
Separate entities. The NSA has its own goals. Google, Facebook, Baidu, IBM have their own goals. But they all have very, very deep pockets. They're all racing as fast as they can for human-level intelligence in a machine. And they're doing it without proper governance. Their stewardship. Here's my big point. If anyone watching this takes one lesson away, it's that innovation races far ahead of stewardship.
Yes.
And what we're dealing now is not a technology that's not like old technologies. It's not like anything that happened during the Industrial Revolution. It's more like nuclear fission. In the 1920s and 30s, nuclear fission was thought of as a way to get free energy out of splitting the atom. What happened was we weaponized it, we destroyed some cities, and then we put a gun at our own heads for 50 years with a nuclear arms race. Superintelligence makes fission look like, you know, it's child's play. AI is the technology that creates technology. So what we're doing is we're ramping into a technology that we don't really understand and we can't really control at a faster rate than the last technology we couldn't control.
That's interesting, James. That's something, in a far less eloquent way, I often find myself saying that same thing. You know, looking at from where we first figured out how to fly a plane, to when we were dropping bombs on cities, to when we first figured out nuclear power, then we were dropping nuclear bombs on cities.
Yeah.
And you look
at
how quickly it can accelerate, and that's archaic technology. Now when you're talking about something that is going to learn our behavior, our brain patterns, exceed that, start to look to sustain itself, it really becomes terrifying. And the funniest thing I find, and I, you know, I can only imagine you've talked to so many people, the people that I talk to that are very involved in tech, and I have a few friends that are CTOs of different companies and very tech savvy. For as much as they understand this technology and see where it can go, I'm always blown away that it seems to be almost more of the Johnny Lunchpail set that sees, well, wait a minute, here are the dangers. And maybe that's because the Johnny Lunchpail set will be the first that will be eliminated in terms of use and jobs and things.
Yeah.
But I'm blown away that these incredibly intelligent people that know how to create and augment artificial intelligence don't see that we're on a path, you know, it's almost like we're creating a path towards extinction.
Yes.
Well, so that there's a question
here's the thing.
Yeah,
the Johnny Lunchpail guys get it because their jobs are going to be replaced. You know, I mean, there are five million professional drivers in the United States who are going to be out of jobs soon. There are 7 million bookkeepers whose jobs are going to be replaced very soon. But the people that are speaking for the industry are people like Zuckerberg, who are so far above it, and who just have the quarterly profits in mind. They're not looking at the big picture.
So, well, then that's my question: is maybe they are Zuckerberg and the people on his side of the aisle, who admittedly are in charge of things. Perhaps they just come down on the faction of we're going to be in control, and humans will always be in control of AI. And Johnny Lunchpails, they're only in control of their truck and their family. So it all comes down to who's controlling the AI. That's what matters the most. Am I right in that?
There's a failure of apprehension that I address in my book, Our Final Invention. I'm going to pick it up again and wave it in front of the camera again.
Please do.
Okay,
Jones, show him your copy, Jones. Is it nearby?
No. See, here's – I can show
you
it.
You lent it.
It's like
no, but here's,
it's on the, I got it on the Kindle.
But here's the thing, you know, there's no financial incentive for people in Zuckerberg's position to point out the dangers of superintelligence. Imagine an intelligence 1,000 or 1,000,000 times more intelligent than we are. Are we pets? Are we curiosities? Ray Kurzweil reckons that by 2029, I disagree with a lot of what he says, but he's a really good reconnoiter of technological advancement. By 2029, we'll have human brains at the price of a computer. And that means that the next thing that will happen is we'll have superintelligence at the price of a computer shortly after. And that means, you know, that really there's no reason for us not to be replaced by these machines.
All right, well, let's take the contrarian point of view then. Is it possible that this would be a really good thing, that AI will be benevolent rulers who will be nice to us, and they'll run things better than humans are? You know, Jones a second ago just went, in the span of 100 years, we learned how to fly, and then we were dropping nukes on people within 40 years.
40 years.
Like, it appears that humans suck.
Let me ask you this. How did it work out with fission? Was fission overall a benefit?
Well, that's what I mean. Humans were in control, and we suck at it. Maybe AI will be better.
AI will be better. Here's the important point. Unless we program benevolence into a machine, it's not going to have benevolence. We don't know jack about benevolence. We don't know jack about human intuition. We don't know jack about imbuing a machine with human values. The big problem is as Miri states, the Machine Intelligence Research Institute is stating, what is friendly AI? What is friendly AI? So is friendly AI the AI that says that says to us, here's what's best for you now. Here's what's best for you now, and we're going to encode that, and you're going to encode that because you're the programmers. Well, if you imbued our civilization with the values of today, they'd be obsolete in 100 years. So you might as well say, why don't we imbue our civilization with the values of slavery and of treating women as chattel, because those are past values. The trouble is, values change from era to era, and they change over time. era to era, and they change from country to country. Right now, there are a lot of places where people and where women and children aren't treated like humans. Mm-hmm. So this whole idea about let's create friendly AI, i.e. AI that follows that does what's best for us, is so far out of reach that it's just ridiculous.
Now, you know, we're talking about like how quickly AI can accelerate and what is our role in terms of interacting with them, or if we can kind of give them some kind of if we can kind of somehow lace ethical thinking into artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
Part of me, and this is a very grim thought, and it's really just come to me in the last week or two, could what is happening now really be just that this is just evolution? At one point there were two cells, and then they grew, and then there was foliage, and then there was dinosaurs. And is it a very condensed view of evolution?
Explosion, yes. No, that's not crazy. That's what a lot of people have thought. There's an idea your listeners should look up called the Great Filter. There was a physicist who proposed that if there are so many Goldilocks planets, then why aren't there more civilizations, and why aren't we more aware of them? And then someone else proposed, well, maybe there's a great filter. Maybe the Cambrian explosion didn't happen on every planet with life. Or maybe the Cambrian explosion happened and then the Industrial Revolution destroyed everybody. Or maybe that happened and then nuclear weapons killed everyone, which is still part of the filter in our future. Or maybe all the civilizations that have existed hit machine intelligence and then became extinct. And so that's the fear. That's the fear. And it's a realistic one. I'm not sure, you know, if we survive global warming, I'm not sure we'll survive machine intelligence. In fact, I'm more worried about machine intelligence.
All right. No, well, now you're just talking about fantasy land stuff. Global warming? Get out of here, Barrett. Robots taking over. Now, that I believe. Is it possible that we will just use artificial intelligence? And is it possible, let me just ask you, is machine learning and artificial intelligence, are those two interchangeable terms, or are they different?
No. Now, artificial intelligence is a gigantic swath of a gigantic playing field of terms.
Okay.
AI is a bit, machine intelligence is a smaller swath that involves machine learning.
Okay. So I won't use them interchangeably anymore. So let's just stick with AI for simplicity's sake.
Good big umbrella.
Right. Is it possible we could just use that stuff and kind of cap it, and the Musk and Hawking and Woz and Gates warning crowd will actually win and rule the day, and we could just have like autonomous cars and quantum machines and smarter, computers, faster computers, but we can stop it there, and we won't actually continue on this march towards singularity where humans will be merging with machines and all that. In other words, can it be stopped at this point, or the box is open and Pandora's?
That could be so. Here's the problem, and there are at least two problems. One is militarily, we are developing battlefield robots and drones to kill without humans in the loop.
Which I like, actually, being anti-war, the less humans dying, the better. Let's let the robots sort it out.
Well, think about it a little bit further than that, and think about what's going to happen is the rich countries are going to kill the poor country people with robots. That's the way it's going to turn out, not robots fighting robots. It's going to be
that's happening now with humans, though. You know,
rich people invading poor countries with machines and killing, slaughtering people, and that's not a good outcome. Wait a minute. Militarily, it's hard to stop because the military always makes arguments to the politicians saying, "Oh, we've got to keep this secret. We've got to have the advantage." And China is doing the same thing. We're doing the same thing. So you're not going to stop autonomous killing machines. You're not going to stop them. They will appear. And the downside, if Americans think that they're immune to this, think about all the SWAT vehicles and machines and guns that come to our streets. The next thing you're going to see, once you see autonomous battlefield robots, is autonomous cops shooting your friends and neighbors. But anyway,
I prefer the human ones shooting my friends and neighbors.
Let me get back to the second point before I lose it, and that's this. Here's the thing. If it weren't enough, bad enough, that many governments are competing to create superintelligence in a machine or human-level intelligence and beyond, corporations have no consciousness. Corporations are, in many analyses, psychopathic. You can't stop a corporation from trying to improve the quarterly bottom line. So all the people we've referenced, Google, IBM, Baidu, Facebook, all those people have quarterly reports, and they're not gonna slow down in the quest for superintelligent machines and killing machines.
James, do you envision a world where, and this is another thing that I've just recently started to think of, with how quickly technological advancements can happen, do you envision a future, maybe even in our lifetime, where it's so foreign to us and so foreign that we almost even start to question who we are as people? And I mean, like, what is a human being? What is mankind?
Great question.
And to the point where you would start to see people, honestly, committing suicide, where they're like, this is so foreign to me. Mm. I don't understand where I am. I have to check out. Mm.
My advice is don't commit suicide as a policy. I think we're going to continue to confront who we are. And what's really interesting, despite what all I've said, I'm very intrigued by AI, and I really like a lot of AI, because AI is the most in-depth look we've ever had at ourselves. It looks into psychology. It looks into neuroscience. It looks into all the things that we do. It looks into personality. Ultimately, it will look into emotions and intimacy, and there will be sex bots. So it's really a profound look at ourselves, taking all these integrated sciences and looking deeply into what it is to be a human. So in that part, I applaud. What I don't applaud is the downside of it is that we are in a very profound way trying to replace ourselves. And we won't be happy. We won't be able to survive in the environment we create.
And do you think, you know, another development that I see, things, you know, AI devices like Watson with IBM or to a degree Siri, Alexa, I don't know where they really rank, where you would rank them within artificial intelligence, but it seems more and more that mankind is trying to give, we're trying to give our devices, we're trying to give them, this isn't an iPad, this is Bob, and we're trying to give them personalities, and it almost seems we're the frog in the boiling water, and AI seems too friendly to really be considered a threat.
Well, it comes back to what you said earlier. You know, what we're doing is creating our replacements. You know, we are the frog in the hot water. You know, we're not going. By the time the hot water gets hot enough to kill us, there'll be something else to replace us. Even Ray Kurzweil, who's incredibly optimistic about all these developments, thinks that it's going to be a good thing because he wants to achieve immortality. He thinks that there's going to be this confluence of AI and our brains and this great relationship, which I don't buy one little bit, but there are plenty of people that do. No, it's, you know, what we have to do is we have to be aware, and that's why I wrote my book. I'll hold it up again if you'd like.
No, please.
But the reason I wrote my book is because this is a dilemma that's confronting everybody individually, and they have to get the basic. I wrote this book to try to reach a lot of people without being technical, to try to help everybody understand the AI revolution that's coming over us.
And that's really truly why I enjoyed your book so much. Like I said, I'm not a tech writer. I'm not incredibly tech savvy. I can send email and receive me.
Barely.
That's about it.
Yeah.
Barely.
You'll be
barely
the first one in the people zoo, Jones. No question.
Right. But
flinging your poo.
Your book, then all of a sudden, these things that I saw and had these instinctive reactions to, it kind of, I was able to kind of, put things in place and kind of to be able to create a dialogue with friends. So that you definitely were successful in that regard. It gave me something where I could start to just the things I saw and had instinctive reactions towards an AI. I was like, okay, this is when someone knows what they're talking about, this is what they sound like.
Well, thank you, because, you know, my goal was to try to communicate, because, frankly, people that make AI can't communicate very well, and I talk to a lot of them. And the ones that can communicate are very sort of arrogant and distant, and they don't look for solutions to problems in the people. They think that only technocrats can solve problems. And so it was really a fundamental goal of mine is to say, hey, you know what? This is what's happening to us all. Let's all get up to speed on it. And the solutions to this may not come out of the tech world. In fact, they probably won't. They might come out of some other world.
Our guest wrote the book, Our Final Invention, Artificial Intelligence and the End of the Human Era. It's James Barrett. You can find him online at jamesbarrett.com. That's James, BARRAT.com. Can you give us like a 5-year, 10-year, you know, 25-year, like what's going to happen in 5 years? What do you see happening in 10, 25, like tangible things? Like obviously we know about autonomous cars and drones and things like that.
I'll get 5 years older, then I'll get 10 years older.
Right. Well, and hopefully you won't have to see any of this shit come to pass. But, I mean, can you give us that time frame?
Not really a futurist, but I know people who are. A couple of things are going to happen in the short term. We're going to replace a lot of drivers with a lot of autonomous cars, and we're going to reduce the number of people that are killed on the highways. And that's a good and a bad thing. Those people that used to drive cars are going to be – there's really no place for them to be retrained that aren't already being taken up by robots. So there's going to be a giant employment disruption. Hmm. There are 7 million bookkeepers that are going to be unemployed. You know, first year legal hires do legal discovery. Those guys have been beaten already by IBM's Watson. IBM's Watson does radiology better than most radiologists. And so it's dipping deep into the middle class. So up ahead, here's two funny things in a tragic way. Teachers, ironically, who are so undervalued and so important, are actually going to be very hard to replace. But bookkeepers, bankers, lawyers are going to be easier to replace. By 2030, according to an MIT report, most jobs will be able to be replaced by automation. However, not every job will be replaced. India just said today, or 2 days ago, we're not going to have any self-driving cars here. Because, you know, like 1 in 4 Indians drive cars for a living. And that's a very interesting thing. That's people rejecting technology, which is a beautiful idea.
All right. So a father of 4 kids, what do I do? What do I tell my children to do? Become teachers and don't become lawyers, which I would have told them not to do anyway.
I would tell them what I tell my kids to do is be tech savvy, you know. If, you know, there'll be a lot of room for repairing robots in the future or developing robots. And as long as, you know, our species holds out, I've told my kids, listen, you need to be taking some programming classes. You're not, you know, like yesterday you had to speak to take English to participate in the world economy. Now you need to know Python. You need to know C++. You need to know some really good languages.
Now, you know, we have this other thing, you know, that is kind of emerging with in terms of the tech world and how it's relating to the public. I'm sure you've seen there was a company, I think it was last year, early this year, in Sweden that was inserting microchips into their employees. And then I think there was a company in Wisconsin now just started to do that. And I believe Sony is trying to develop contact lenses that can record what you're seeing and hearing. And there was this concept that I was talking to someone, one of my friends who is very much into artificial intelligence and in the tech world, that, you know, now if we get to the point where we're inserting these devices into our body, my friend was saying, well, this is our way of keeping up. And I was saying, well, the scary thing is eventually they'll figure out, you know, there are light pulses in your brain. And over time, this is where they erode. You put this chip in and all that connectivity comes back and you have the brain that you had when you were 18 and it's you're ready to go. I look at all that and I still say, what's the point? Aren't we still so incredibly behind what will be artificial super intelligence? It almost seems a waste.
Here's the thing. In the short term, they're going to try to make us into robots. In the longer term, they'll realize it's inefficient and they'll just use robots. What they're trying to do is create robotic interfaces so that we can participate in the robotic economy that's coming. That won't work for long because our brains only operate at a certain bandwidth, and robots and microchips operate at a different bandwidth. It's coddling us for the short term. I wouldn't believe any of that. Anyone who puts a chip in themselves to satisfy their employer needs to have their head examined. It's a direct route to obsolescence.
Well, and so on that tip, you know. Well, yeah. So on that tip, I have a two-part question. And the first part is when guys in the tech world are talking about universal basic income, is that their way of trying to assuage us and even pull the wool over our heads and say, yes, you know, this is all going to be great for you. Just go along with the program.
Yes. Universal basic income. Don't make me laugh. Here's the problem. For universal basic income to happen, the tax money has to come from somewhere. So you would think the tax money would have to come from where Google, Facebook, IBM make their wealth. Well, they make their wealth in the United States, but they pay their taxes in Ireland and other countries, Bermuda, where there's a very, very low tax rate. So they're not paying for your roads or your teachers. They're lying to you. They are not paying for the infrastructure that you live in. So how are they going to pay for a basic minimum wage? They aren't. It's a joke. It's a giant, giant fraud.
So then the second part of my question is, we're going to have a dearth of people.
Clear enough about that?
No, yeah, no, I got it loud and clear. I thought
they're
was...
They're not paying taxes here. How are they going to pay for a basic minimum income? They dodge taxes in America, all of them. Look it up. I'm not making this up.
No, yeah, absolutely. The corporate
Google,
inversions.
Where Google's paying taxes.
Yeah, right on. And that's why they're getting hit with, so many antitrust suits and so forth.
Yes,
and,
yeah.
And so the second part of the question is, obviously, with approaching 8 billion people on planet Earth, you're painting a dystopian, bleak picture where there's just going to be too many humans. So how do they solve that problem? Do the machines just kill us?
I tend to point out problems. I don't really have a solution to problems. In the short term, we will have a lot of conflicts. In the longer term, our conflict will be against the machines, and that's really all. As far ahead as my,
I feel like humans will always win. I don't know if I've seen too many movies.
You've watched too many Bruce Willis movies.
I think you could stick a robot in my backyard. I would fucking kill that robot, James. I'm telling you.
I'll find a way. You know, the thing is, we've been indoctrinated by so many feel-good movies about robots, and we always win in the end. We don't have to win in the end. You know, it's not written anywhere. We've been inoculated. Think about a situation in which we don't win in the end, and then think about how do we get around that.
How long will it be before robots will be developed that will be indistinguishable from us, indistinguishable from another human being?
I'm a robot. Can you distinguish me from a human being?
No, a robot would not have held his book up this many times. They're just not that capitalist.
You're going to hold it up, and then you don't. Hold it up.
I'm a robot from the future.
Nice. Well, okay, so...
I don't know. You know, here's the thing that was not very good about the movie Her, which...
She.
The other one.
She, yeah.
She?
She, with Joaquin.
Are you talking with...
Joaquin Phoenix?
No, the one that had the robot that was perfect, and she also was very smart.
I don't know. I was thinking of the Joaquin Phoenix.
It must have been a hit. No, her, I thought was great. We're not gonna solve robotics and AI at the same time. AI is moving on a different track than robotics. It'll be a long time before we have perfect robotics. And I tell you what, according to what I've read, the first perfect robotics will be sex robots. In fact, there's an organization I was amused to learn called it's like Women Against Sex Bots, because they're afraid maybe legitimately so of being replaced.
Wow. Well, isn't that crazy, though? That almost shows the limitation of mankind. Like, Jerry Seinfeld had this bit of, like, as soon as we develop something, we figure out how to have sex with it or how it enhances our sex. We develop a phone sex. We, you know, get a copier, put your ass on it, take a picture. Yeah. And then here we are working on our artificial intelligence, working on robots. And then we're like, how do we fuck it?
That was the whole video revolution. That was the whole internet revolution. You can't stop our basic instincts.
Absolutely. No, it's just crazy to see. It's almost like it's weird that our instinct to reproduce and create more of us, it's almost like it's our fatal flaw or fatal distraction as well.
Well, our instinct is wrapped in this feeling of having sex. So if it were just this, you know, biological drive, that would be one thing. But it's this whole, you know, I'm sure you've had sex before and you understand what I mean.
I know. I understand where you're coming from.
I don't know about that. One married guy and one confirmed bachelor, or affirmed bachelor. We do not get laid a lot, James, on this show at least. So has anyone ever tried to attack you for being an alarmist, for profiting on it? Have they tried to discredit or even intimidate you?
No. The people attack me online. People get in my face, but I'm not. They don't. Fortunately, the ones who do that are not very coherent, so they're not. It's not a giant battle. But I'm not. I'm not. You know. I'm not. I am for the people. I'm not. You know, technology people. When I go to speak at places, sometimes the tech guys get up and give me a hard time. But you know, the thing is, every tech guy knows in their heart of hearts that there is a downside to this. I call it the 2-minute problem. I went to a lot of lectures about AI, and then the last 2 minutes, the guy would say, "Oh, and by the way, this could kill us all, ha, ha, ha." And then they go on to the Q&A. I decided to focus on that part.
So are these guys that are just selling their souls to the devil for immediate, you know,
no,
profits?
They don't think it's as impending a problem as you and I do.
Okay, so they're on the Mark Zuckerberg, hey, humans will always be in control, we have this.
You know, and there's a really good ethicist, Wendell Wallach at Yale, who says we're going to need some kind of giant disaster for us to look at autonomous systems and rethink what we're doing. And unfortunately, I think that's the truth. We don't, you know, look at Bhopal, kill 15,000 people and then decide, well, maybe we shouldn't put chemical plants right in the middle of giant population centers.
Yeah, but Union Carbide hasn't been heard from again. We put them out of business.
Look at all the industrial disasters.
Right. All right, so a good disaster is just what we need to snap us out of this.
Well, the trouble with AI is it's not clear that we'll have a survivable disaster. When it gets smart enough and important enough to do some real damage, it's not clear that there'll be a comeback for us.
And
now,
you go
are
ahead.
You continuing to work in AI, you know, researching, or you know, kind of where are you at now? And obviously,
you know what I'm doing. I'm making films. I just made a film on PBS about Zika and Ebola.
Okay.
You can look it up. It's called Spillover on PBS. I make films most of the time. I make a film.
Were you thinking of doing a fictional? Am I right in hearing that? Somehow, I think I recall hearing that you were thinking of doing some kind of script or fictional story as well. Or do I have that wrong? Maybe I'm confusing that with someone else.
Okay. No, that's wrong.
Sorry.
That's wrong. I think about doing a film about it, but I'm not ready to do that. I've got a bunch of other interests, but I continue to be involved and to be interested, and I speak about it. And if anybody wants to hear me speak, you can look me up and I'll come speak. I try to get the word out, but I'm not, and I'm thinking about another book, but right now I'm just I'm trying to make a living as a filmmaker.
Mm-hmm. So how do we reach you? Obviously, it's jamesbarrett.com. Is that your site?
B-A-R-R-A-T, jamesbarrett.com. Or buy this book.
Yeah. What does it look like again? There it is. Our final invention. I like it.
You know what? My battery is going to die in about 3%. So,
all right. That's it. It's over with.
Listen, I've had a great time.
The robots have won. They are telling James to stop speaking.
Yeah. People from the future are telling me to shut up, so I've got to go now.
All right, James. You rock, man.
I really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you for your smart questions and your inspiration about this.
No, thank you very much, James. And I do appreciate your patience. Obviously, I certainly am a tech and AI neophyte, but I do appreciate you coming on the show and giving great information. I really loved having you on.
Well, invite me back.
We will. Thanks, James. See you, buddy. Bye-bye.
Take care, guys.
See ya.
Thank you, James.
All right, so that's James Barrett, author of the book Artificial Intelligence, Our Final Invention. And Jones, now you can go and get into the fetal position in the corner of your Spartan efficiency, because everything that you have feared is true, apparently.
Yeah, see, and I kind of dig that James doesn't feel obliged to make everyone come away with this feel good and give you a hug at the end of it. I kind of dig that he's like, yeah, I'll tell my kids to work on robots, but, you know, the day's coming. We're finished.
We're finished.
Because if that's what someone believes, put it out there. Like, if there's any hope that we could turn it around, you have to have that attitude.
Yeah, it was almost refreshing how bleak his outlook is. Although not like he would say his point out problems. I don't really know how it's going to turn out. I was kind of hoping that maybe he had been intimidated, like somebody had called him in the middle of the night and was like, hey, Barrett, I'm going to send a robot to your house. You're right. Dead. Stop talking about robots, man. Click. I'm kind of disappointed that he's not being harassed by the tech companies or the deep state or whatever.
Yeah, I think artificial intelligence, I think deep down in their little growing AI brains, they know they have us beat and they're not really worried about us.
Yeah, so
I think it's that grim.
Right. So he said, what? I have to tell my kids to become either teachers or they have to learn how to fix robots and learn like Python and C++.
And things like that.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. I guess those are the only two things that'll survive in the future. And we've also speculated here on the show that being an artist will be something that can't be replicated by robots in the future, or at least in the near future.
Not in the near future. I think we have like artist, teacher,
well,
and computer programmer.
I wouldn't have guessed teacher, dude. Like, I should have challenged him on that, dude, honestly, because it's like, wait a second. If a lawyer can be a great lawyer, a robot lawyer can be a great lawyer because they have all of the, you know, legal precedent in their mind, you know, in their memory banks, and they can access things from the cloud. Why can't a teacher be better at being a teacher if it's a robot teacher? That doesn't make sense to me. I mean, certainly the great teachers in my life and the ones in my child's children's lives have been like these empathetic mother, you know, very human people, as opposed to just being great with the facts and the truisms and so forth. So I guess maybe that's it. Like, that's something that he doesn't think, and other experts don't think, that AI will be able to replicate very soon, is that human quality.
Right. And I guess the flip side would almost be when you're looking at, artificial intelligence going into the legal system, they are just doing something to humans, to mankind, whereas a teacher is drawing things. Even though they're putting ideas into people's heads, they're also trying to draw something out of humans. I think in terms of interaction, that could still be very difficult for AI.
Right. Well, and if you ask me, lawyers stopped being human a long time ago, so it figures that they will be roboticized soon. So
they will get theirs.
Yeah. So artists, musicians, they can't be good robots. Robots won't be good at doing that stuff. Do you think you'll be going to a Lollapalooza that's all robots someday, Jones?
At least at the EDM stages, yeah.
Yeah? It won't be any worse than the one you just went to, am I right?
I can't imagine it would be. I can't imagine it could be.
In a world of beaten down middle-aged men,
frizzy panty waists,
and triggered snowflakes,
two dudes
say the shit you say,
think,
and feel.
And now,
we're ready to blow this shit up.
Announcing Jones and Mike, version 2.0,
coming to a phone
car
or computer near you.
Live video and audio.
Anywhere you are.
Any way you like it.
Anytime you need it.
Words that sear through your mind like tiny little missiles of brutal truth that make you go, Or freeing men from the malaise of middle age.
Giving women the straight dope on what their dudes think.
It's the sh- dudes say
that women want to hear.
Go to www.patreon.com/Jones and Mike.
P-A-T-R-E-O-N.
Patreon.com/Jones and Mike.
Support the show.
Join our community.
Get rewards.
And help save Spaceship Earth from the hordes of fake news bullshit artists.
Dude Say with Jones and Mike.
Get the show for not much dough.
Dude Say with Jones and Mike.
Rated M for mature audiences.
Jones, I got to say that for a guy who was out at a Lala after show or after party, what do they call them, an after show last night?
They're you look after show.
An after show. You look really, really good. I got to say, clean living really helps a guy like you bounce back faster than a guy like, I don't know, say me, for example.
I think it has something to do with it. I think it has something to do with it. Although I had two shots last night, I think I drank three beers. In fact, I know I drank three beers. That's five alcoholic beverages for John.
Well, right. So on the one hand, like when we were kids, we would go like, oh, man, I got to like build up my tolerance. But I think as a middle ager now, because you don't have as many miles on your liver, like it can just bounce right back. I think first thing in the morning, as opposed to mine, it's like, dude, stop doing this to me. Why do you persist?
Right, right. Plus, I do little things like I biked home from the after show.
So you saw who again?
So last night at the after show, I saw White Reaper. They opened up for Royal Blood. And Royal Blood, it was who I was really there to see.
And great. Thumbs up. Yes.
Thumbs up to both of them, actually. Like White Reaper, I caught a glimpse of them when I went on Thursday. They were one of like the 12:45 shows. And I didn't really get it. Maybe it's just they're a smaller band right now. You don't know them, and you put them on this huge stage. It doesn't really work. But have you ever been to Lincoln Hall?
I have not.
So the after show was at Lincoln Hall, which used to be the old Three Penny Cinema on Lincoln Avenue. I've never been there until last night. It is excellent. People say in this Chicago, Talia Hall is the best concert venue in the city. If that's better than Lincoln Hall, then it's got to be...
Where's Talia Hall? Isn't that like in Pilsen or something?
Pilsen, yeah.
Okay.
So if that is better than Lincoln Hall, my God, like you walk right in, like the whole venue is just set up for the night's show. There's a bar. You only get to go in the bar if you are going to the band. And then when you go inside, the setting is so intimate. Like there's not a bad seat. We had like this little balcony where we were just right over the top of the band. Like it was unbelievable.
How many could fit in that place? 500?
That's what they say. I looked it up last night. I said 500, but it looked like 150. Like it's that tight, but it's excellent. It is excellent. Royal Blood were fantastic. And then White Reaper was... That was kind of more of their element still. They're really cocky, but they're really a good, like they're the self-proclaimed world's greatest American rock band. And
well,
they had some
that's a low bar.
That was funny. But then they also kept complaining about Royal Blood because Royal Blood got to play on the stage and they played on the floor and they kept bitching about that. And just, they're one of those bands, like they sang until the sound guys shut their mics off. Like one of those things where it's like, I guess that's kind of the punk ethos.
This is no way to treat the greatest American rock band of all time. Right.
So they kind of look for that combativeness. That's going to wear thin.
Yeah, that is embarrassing to not even have a stage when you're the greatest American rock band.
Right.
Like, and meanwhile, Royal Blood is, despite their name, they're not British. They're from like Milwaukee, right?
No, they're from the UK.
Oh, they are? Why did I think they were from Milwaukee?
The first time I saw them was at the
distance.
Eagles Ballroom in Milwaukee.
That's it. I always associated them. Okay, so Royal Blood, duh, British, yeah?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, so there's no backstage animosity over that title, that moniker between them and their opening band. They're gonna be like, great, you're the greatest American rock band. Who fucking cares? America, outside of Aerosmith and Guns N' Roses, what have you given the rock world, frankly?
Well, it was funny. So they came out, And like halfway through the show, like the White Reaper, when they were out there, they kept saying like, this side's better than this side. And like doing this whole thing.
Jeez.
And like, I mockingly Royal Blood came out like, okay, we're all on the same side here. Great. I don't know what that whole thing was about with the last band. Jesus Christ. And then they just started playing. And I guess, I looked on Twitter later and people were kind of ripping on White Reaper for the way they were acting. And then Royal Blood was like, great, made some comment like, great show last night at White Reaper. When you hear the phone not ringing, that's us.
Oh, so you know what it is? Like Royal Blood, even though they're great, they're still so small that they don't tour with an opening act. There are just like regional opening acts that the promoters slot in.
No, White Reaper's from Kentucky.
Well, right. So maybe they're just on the Midwest leg of the tour, or even sure. Just this one. They needed someone to come up.
Oh, no. This was just pieced together by C3. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they're not like touring. But
oh, I forgot. Duh. It's a Lala thing. It's not a Royal Blood thing. God, it's like I'm not even listening to you. You said all of this. In fact, I said it was a Lala after party. Okay, right. After show. So, but meanwhile, the big after show in town was at the Metro, the Foo Fighters, where Perry... I guess went up on stage and did a few songs, including Mountain Song.
Oh, really? I did not hear that.
I did see that on like consequenceofsound.net or whatever. So did he stop by and see the Young Bucks, Royal Blood, and help them out?
If he did, I was not aware of it, and I'm sure that place is small enough there would have been enough of a buzz that would have kind of permeated through the building. So,
And compared
yeah, it was
to
a great, I mean, both bands were great. The venue was awesome. I mean, it certainly beat my experience at the event on Thursday.
Yeah, right. That's what I was going to say. Better or worse than Lala on Thursday, first day.
Oh, my God.
And not your first time. This is your second or third time.
This was bad. This was bad. The last couple of years I've been going pretty regularly. And just every act that I went to go see was late getting on. Like the first actor I went to go see the full show, there was this French, she's almost like a French version of Lorde, like kind of like an EDM-ish kind of singer or whatever. And I heard a couple of her songs online. I'm like, I'll go see her. She sounds cool. I went, her show was at 2:00.
What's her name?
Jane.
Okay.
J-A-I-N. So I went to go see her.
That's the French spelling.
I guess. But I went to go see her and I get there like 1:50, 1:55, and I don't know her real well, but like I see they're kind of like working on stage on the sound equipment and stuff. I'm like, that looks like it's that Jane girl.
Jeez.
Like, is she out there like working on the stage too?
Even the greatest American rock band of all time didn't have to set up their own shit.
Right. So there's another band playing behind me and I'm like, oh, I guess they'll get this sorted by 2 or whatever. Then it was like, it went a couple minutes after 2 and then she had to quickly run off stage and then run back on like, I'm here.
Oh, jeez, like, that's embarrassing.
I felt bad for her. I was getting uncomfortable just when you like start to like just, just kind of like wring your hands like, come on, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go, come on, knock it out, let's
yeah,
go.
Yeah, you never,
let's
it's go. Like seeing a bride on the wedding day. You don't want to see her until the big moment. You shouldn't have to see the band or the performer before the show starts.
Right.
With one noticeable exception, I saw Penn & Teller in Las Vegas, and there was like a little three-piece like kind of jazz band playing off to the side of the stage, just kind of as people were milling about getting in their seats and whatever. And it turned out one of them in disguise was Penn Jillette.
Oh.
So that was kind of like, oh, all right, kind of cool. And I know that, like, you know, Eddie Vedder will come out with, like, the Frogs or whatever, or some band that he's pushing or likes, and play with them, like, surreptitiously. So.
Right, right.
So Jane comes out, and she made up for having to set up her own equipment by rocking?
She was great. She really was great. I mean, it's not a rock show. Like I said, she's more along the vein of Lorde, but she was really good. I have to say, man. And she was one of those, this is just like a new thing now. And I think people just almost have to do it just to make a buck. She's the only one on stage. You know, she sits there and makes a noise and records it and then makes another noise and records it and kind of builds the song while you're there.
I like that looping stuff.
It is cool, but so many people do it now. But I think you almost have to do it. Like, no one buys albums. Then when you go tour, you don't want to split it 4 or 5 ways. So I guess that's how you make your money. But not to put that down or put it in, like, this little box. She was great.
Mm.
So she ended, and then there was a band that was on the other, the opposite side towards the Bud Light stage, which is on the north side of Grant Park. And I knew I was going to hate them, but they were one of those things where I was like, okay, I just have to see, because this is so out of my wheelhouse. I just have to see this. I have to try to understand what other people are seeing in it. So I walked across the way, like off to the side. I was not going to get in the crowd. And I got a glimpse of the Suicide Boys.
The Suicide Boys. Here they are on YouTube. There's fire and stuff. They look kind of like they've been in county jail a few times. Yes. That looks legit to me. The crowd full of honkies from the burbs, they seem to be liking it, and they're angry, requisitely angry about it.
Loved it. In fact, the thing that I definitely observed this year, more than any year in the past, the only music that really got reactions from young people, Lord did, but outside of that, were hip-hop acts like that, where it was just that real heavy downbeat, like,
got a
gun to my head, gonna shoot myself dead. Like, and like everybody, or then there was the Perry stage, which is all the EDM music that's literally just like,
yeah, everyone's on Molly, for God's sakes.
And those, the young people totally reacted to those bands. Like, and I don't know, it's so simplistic, and then all they can do is just do this dance, but I think that makes them feel comfortable.
Yeah.
They don't want to do more than that, so they just kind of can fall into that. It's so, the music that was reacted to by the younger generation was so dumbed down and just raw human. I mean, like, honestly, this Suicide Boys thing was just like simplistic meatheadery.
Now, in fairness, is it possible, because like Lala is such a hot ticket now, you buy your ticket without even knowing who's playing, so you may not even actually like any of these acts. You're just there to say you were at Lala or whatever.
True. Absolutely true. I think it's more of an event than it's more of just a destination event than it is a musical event. However, what I'm saying is young people were like juiced up to hear this noise that was on at the Perry stage, and like bands like the Suicide Boys,
right.
Like those are the things that they would really react to. So I could tolerate that for about 10 minutes just, and I was observing it. Like I felt like I was an alien visiting Earth, or if I was like a US like tourist in like Cuba or Russia. And I was like, so this is how it is. Okay.
Really?
And I couldn't. In fact, I started to get really uncomfortable towards the end of my 8-minute stay with the Suicide Boys, because I got this thought in my head, like, I wouldn't want anyone to think that I wanted to be there.
Right. I don't want anyone to see me here.
Like, I kind of wanted to turn my back on it and shake my head as I walked away, so everyone kind of knows, like, well, that guy doesn't like the Suicide Boys.
Right.
For whatever reason, that was important to me. So I walked off, went by the Perry stage. I loved to observe that 10 minutes of just EDM shit.
Right.
Kids drugged out, barfing everywhere.
Yeah. Nice.
Rolling on pavement.
Do you see any boobies at that? What happens?
Like full nipple?
Yeah, yeah. Do you see anybody take their top off at Lala?
No, I do always. Whenever they go up on the shoulders, I like look for it. But no one did it this year. So I do have to say,
creepy old man Jones.
This was also the worst year in terms of, like, Lollapalooza versus Riot Fest. Riot Fest, better music. Lollapalooza is more the beautiful people. This year, there was something, and maybe we're hitting kind of a low point, but, like, chicks now were doing the whole, like, they all want to be Kylie Jenner.
Oh.
Not everybody has the body for that.
Nope.
And
nope,
this isn't nope, body nope. shaming, but, like, if it's not highlighting what you got going on, it's hurting what you got going on.
More Caitlyn than Kylie?
It was terrible. I mean, it was terrible. I couldn't admit. So many chicks were walking around, and I'm like, oh my God, why? Why are you dressed like that? I'm not even like, why are you dressed like that? You look like a slut. I'm like, you look terrible. You have no business wearing that. But anyway.
You got very high standards, though, Jones.
No, dude, I'm telling you, this was Riot Fest bad.
So who was the best act you saw, though? If you were, since you didn't see any good asses, well, did you see any good acts?
So then, after I left the Perry stage, I went to go see Liam Gallagher.
Your fave.
Great for 15 minutes. And then inexplicably, it broke bad.
Yeah, he's a fan of the drink, isn't he?
Oh, very much so.
And he does not tour very often.
No, in fact, in the last like 9 years, he's been to Chicago once and New York once in the United States. That's it.
Right. And I guess he had his fill here. The crowd's digging it. He sounds okay.
Right.
He's liking it.
Yep.
He's got a unibrow.
I'm thinking to myself, like, I wanted to tell you this.
So he just said something like, get the fuck all right, yeah, or something. Shook his maracas at the crowd.
Yep.
He exits. Is it stage left?
He did exit stage left.
It's the left of the stage as you're facing the crowd is stage left. Yeah. So he exits stage left, legit. And then the band plays on.
The band plays on. And the song, this is a new song. But as I'm listening to it, I'm like, God, I don't know the song really well, but I know he has another part here. He walked off. Doesn't come back. The band literally is looking to the left.
They are
looking over.
The bassist is looking off stage.
Yep. And then eventually by the end of the song, all three members.
Oh, dude,
of the
they're
band
showing a woman, by the way. They're showing a woman and she's facing the crowd. Was she like the sign language chick?
Yes. I don't know why they do it, but they're the best. They're the best. And she's like doing the whole thing. Like, it's awesome.
Wait, do that again. Do that again.
She just does her whole like thing. I don't know. But
I want to see her in the bottom of the screen the whole time.
Oh, yeah. She was the best. But so he walks off. The band is looking. By the end of the song, they just literally turn at the side of the stage, like playing, but just looking, not looking at the crowd, looking at the side. Like, is he coming back or not? Didn't come back. They hung up their instruments and walked off.
Dude, I want to see that. I want to see them leave. Do they have shame in their eyes?
No, they just were like, they really just kind of were like, I don't know, and we can do
about
it.
Here they are leaving the stage, dude. They do a bow. This is minute 17 of the friggin' performance, and they just leave. He's supposed to play for an hour, is that right?
Hour, yep. So then
were people pissed off, dude? In shock. Yeah.
Took off from there, and then...
Wait. Were people pissed off? Were people like, what's going on?
Oh, totally pissed off. Totally pissed off. Because he had a good crowd there.
Yeah.
He had a good crowd there that showed up for as little as he tours now or is even in the charts here. He had a good crowd there. Walks off after a couple minutes. So I left there, went and saw this band, Atlas Genius. They were fine off this side stage. And then the real reason I went.
Yeah.
To see Lord.
Yeah. And it's raining on y'all for the main act.
The weather had turned. It's pouring down on us. But she is a phenomenal. I love her.
Yeah,
I know.
Here she is. Oh, here come my rain man. Thank you.
So they're out like squeegeeing the stage.
So I.
She's cute.
I want to do something I've never done before, Lollapalooza.
This is cool.
I want to play a song I've never played before.
How old is she?
20.
Yeah, she's cute.
And
she's thanking the squeegee dudes, very humble.
Right. Now you see this guy walk across.
Yeah, there he is.
And I knew right away that's good.
Yeah.
Hold on 1 second, guys. That's my production manager. If he's walking on the stage, that means they're having some sort of conversation about the weather right now.
Yeah, yeah. She's kind of smiling.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love.
Guys, I will be back for you. I promise. I'm gonna do everything I can. I guess the festival has said the weather is too crazy for us to play right now. We'll be back. Have a drink.
Dude, I could have replayed that whole, like, they just gave me the cut sign. Fuck! Like, that was just raw human. There was no theater there.
Oh, man. Terrible. And so this is your day, dude, is seeing Liam Gallagher play for 15 minutes and seeing Lord play for 20.
Yeah. Yeah. Barely even playing. Then we have to, because of lightning, we have to evacuate.
Oh my God. That's an annual thing, though, at Lolla.
It was a disaster. They do the whole thing go to the exits. There will be police that will guide you on the way out. You will receive instructions there. No cops. Total shit show leaving. It was a disaster. An area that we normally walk through coming in and out of the event that takes 1 minute to get through took 20 minutes.
Oh, dude, I got sounds home. Like hell.
Every square ounce of me was soaked. It was a shit show.
And people on the way out, were they like, yeah, still a great day. A bad day at Lala is still better than a good day at work. Were they cool about it?
I think that was the attitude. There was no aggression. Everyone was really pretty chill. I have to say, there were two meatheads that tried to force their way out of the crowd, which could have broke really bad. But most part, everyone was like, eh. I have to give the crowd credit. They were
but no security.
Chill.
Like after Manchester, after all this bullshit, this fake terrorism bullshit, there's no security anywhere.
Cops to security guards. Shit show. I don't know where they were. It was a joke.
Dude, imagine the black eye on Chicago if there was a stampede at Lala.
Oh, it could have happened in seconds. Could have happened in seconds.
Rom's too busy suing the feds over sanctuary city laws. He's not staffing up Lala, for God's sakes. Unbelievable, Jones. I'm sorry that happened to you, but Riot Fest is going to be way better, bro.
Fantastic. It can't be worse.
It usually rains at least one day at Riot Fest, too. I've never been rained on, although you have.
Oh, yeah, I've been poured on.
Fingers crossed.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm glad Royal Blood was good. And who's the greatest rock and roll band in American history again? Who are they?
White Reaper.
White Reaper. I can't even say that.
Eh, the name's not the best, but they are good, no doubt.
Ah!